I want to follow 1 minute through this thing. Actual files, actual functions, where does it start?
Main.go under the command directory. And it's short. It opens two connections, fetches one thing over the internet, builds a client and blocks forever.
Two connections being the two databases.
A pricing database handle and a stream load client for Sterix. Neither is interesting. The third thing is.
Which is?
A call to fetch in the asset contracts package. It goes out to four exchanges and pulls down their published directories, which contract each ticker trades at on each chain.
Over the internet at startup.
Before the loop starts. And if a venue can't be reached, the process dies right there rather than starting.
Why die? Surely you carry on with the three that answered.
Then you'd publish prices for whichever chains happen to resolve, and the ones that didn't would silently have no prices. A missing venue is indistinguishable from a venue with nothing to say.
So it's better to not start than to start wrong.
The comment above that line says exactly that, and it's the one place in main worth reading.
Then what?
It builds a config struct, the database, the directories, the writer, the chain list, and four knobs and calls run. Main never returns.
Fine, run.
Run is in sync.go and it's about 15 lines, a ticker. Every ticket calls catch up. If catch up returns an error, it logs it and does not stop.
It swallows the error.
It logs at error level and comes round again. Which is right, because nothing was written, the next pass retries from the same cursor.
Okay, catch up. What does that do first?
Asks a function called pending which minutes it owes. Pending reads the cursor, adds a minute to it, and walks forward until it reaches the last complete minute or hits the bound.
So it builds a list of timestamps.
A list of timestamps, oldest first. If it's empty, it returns immediately.
And then it loops over them and does the work.
Almost. There's one read before the loop, and where it sits is the interesting bit.
What read?
The graph, every alias, every pair of market names that are the same market. Read once, outside the loop over minutes.
Why not per minute? It's per minute data.
It isn't. A price is an observation. It belongs to a moment. The graph is a statement about identity. This pool and that listing are the same market. That doesn't change between 1 minute and the next.
So reading it once is just an optimization.
It's more than that. Every minute in the pass folds its names the same way, which is what makes a replayed minute reproducible. Read it per minute, and 2 minutes in one pass could disagree.
Right now the loop.
For each minute, call publish, then record that minute as published, in that order.
And publish is where the actual work is.
Publish is 5 lines. Read the market prices for that minute. Derive, land on chains, write, return how many.
5 lines is suspiciously few.
Every one of them is a call into somewhere else. That's the file to read if you want the shape, and the 4 it calls if you want the detail.
Start with the read then. Where do market prices come from?
A method called market prices at on the pricing database client. And that's 2 layers. The client method is a wrapper. It calls a generated function and converts row types into domain types. The actual query is handwritten in a .sql file.
So the SQL is a source file, not a string in the Go.
A source file. A generator reads it and writes the Go, and the wrapper exists to keep database null types out of everything downstream.
What does the query say?
Distinct on pricing identifier, ordered by timestamp descending. So for every market, its most recent price at or before that minute.
The latest one before the minute, that's the price as of then.
And it's bounded on both sides, not just at or before, but also at or after the minute minus the staleness window.
Why the lower bound? You want the latest, however old.
No, you want the latest, provided it isn't ancient. A market that stopped trading an hour ago should price nothing, not stand at its last value forever.
And I suppose it also stops the query walking backwards through history for something that isn't there.
That too, it keeps the read inside a chunk or two, instead of scanning the past.
Okay, so we have every market's price. Now derive.
Before derive, there are two adapters in sync.go worth knowing about, because they're where a real edge case lives.
Go on.
A function called quoted. Its job is to name the two assets in each market. For an exchange market, the venue reported its two tickers separately, and they're taken as reported. For everything else, the name was built by joining a pair, and it gets split apart again.
Why not just always split? The name has a separator in it.
Because a venue can put the separator inside a ticker. Gate marks retired listings that way. Split that, and you get nonsense.
So you only split names your own code built?
Only names your own code built, where you know the alphabets can't contain it. There's a function called split derived, and its comment says precisely that.
And the second, adapto?
A method called dollars. It builds the set of things that are worth $1.
Stablecoins, hard-coded, I assume.
The tickers are in a short list at the top of the file. The contracts aren't. It asks the directories where those stablecoins trade on each chain and adds every address they name.
So a new mint of a coin, already listed, needs no code change?
None. A genuinely new stablecoin is a one-line edit.
Now derive, which file?
Derive.go, function called dollars, a different dollars, confusingly, and that's a naming smell somebody should fix. It does three things and the order matters.
Which three?
Fold the names, rewrite every market using the folded names. Rewrite the dollar set using the folded names too, then hand all of it to the conversion.
Folding is the merging thing.
Folding is in assets.go, and it's the one genuinely clever function in the change.
Show me what it's doing.
It's a union find. There's a map from name to parent, a root function that walks up and flattens as it goes, and a union that joins two names.
Standard disjoint set.
Standard with one deliberate detail. When it joins two groups, it makes the smaller name the winner.
Smaller alphabetically, why does that matter?
Because otherwise, which name a group answers to depends on the order the edges arrived in. Two runs over the same graph would name the same asset differently.
And then the prices would key differently.
The comment says it in one line. The smaller name wins, so the answer does not depend on the order the edges arrived in. That's a determinism guarantee hiding in a two-line comparison.
What's it actually unioning?
For each alias, it splits the child into two halves, and if the alias is marked inverted, it swaps them. Then it unions the parent's base with one half and the parent's quote with the other.
One edge, two unions.
One statement about markets, two statements about assets.
And the inverted swap, get that wrong and what happens?
You union a stablecoin with the thing it's trading against. Everything ends up worth a dollar, and it looks almost plausible.
Lovely, so now every name has one name, convert.
Convert.go, one constant at the top, hops equals one.
One hop.
Then the function seeds a map with every dollar asset at one, and loops twice.
Twice because zero and one.
Each pass walks every market. If the quote side is already priced, it prices the base. If the base is already priced, it prices the quote.
Both directions off the same row.
Both directions, and the comment says why the second matters. An exchange quotes the dollar in lira, not the lira in dollars, so without reading backwards, you never price a currency.
And if two markets both reach the same asset?
There's a tiny weighted accumulator type at the bottom of the file. Adds value times weight, sums the weight, divides at the end. So a token quoted by 10 venues outweighs one quoted by a single pool.
Where does the weight come from?
It rode in on the market price row. The aggregate already computed it. It's the total weight of the venues that were live for that second.
So the weighting is done upstream, and this just carries it forward.
Carries it forward one more level, from markets to assets.
Right, now landing on chains.
chains.go, one function, 12 lines. It asks the directory for each chain, which addresses these names resolve to, and inverts that into address to chains.
Inverts it why?
Because the same contract address can be deployed on two chains, so the answer is a set, not a single chain.
And then?
Back in derive.go, a function called tokens. For every priced asset, take every name it folded onto, and for every chain that name lives on, emit a row.
So one asset becomes many rows.
One price fanned out over every address and every chain it goes by. Which is the point of folding them together in the first place. You price it once, and it answers for all of them.
Okay, last file, the write.
Sterics.go in the sync package. One method, and it does four things.
Which are?
Refuse an empty batch, open a transaction with a label, send the rows, commit, and then check what came back.
The label being the minute.
The table name and the minute's Unix seconds, joined. Sterics keeps every label it has committed and refuses a repeat.
So a retry of a finished minute gets rejected.
And there's a function underneath that decides whether a rejection is good news. If the existing job is finished, committed, or visible, it is that minute is really there, so the job returns success and lets the cursor catch up.
And if it's still in flight?
Real failure. That minute isn't published yet, and pretending otherwise would skip it.
What's the fourth thing, the check?
After commit, it compares the number of rows Sterics, says it loaded against the number sent.
Why would those differ?
Because a load that parses none of its rows commits successfully and stores nothing.
You'd get a green commit and an empty minute.
And the cursor would move past it. The comment above that check says it in two lines, and it's the sort of thing you only write after it has happened to you.
How do the rows actually go over?
Comma-separated text, built by a small encoder at the bottom of the same file. Chain identifier, address, the minute, the price, and when it was derived.
Hand-rolled comma-separated values.
Five fields and no escaping needed, because every one of them is a number, an address, or a formatted time. It's a byte buffer and a loop.
All right, say the whole path back to me in file order.
Main wires it and calls run. Run ticks. Ketchup asks the cursor for the minutes owed and reads the graph once. For each minute, publish reads the prices through the database client, which runs a handwritten query. Fold in assets, convert in convert, land on chains in chains, fan out in derive. Then the writer in the sync package sends one labeled transaction, checks the row count, and only then does ketchup move the cursor.
And the only file with any cleverness in it is the union find.
The union find, and the four lines in the writer that check whether a commit really committed anything.